Thank you, Blessing and Jonga. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Friday, November 28th, 2014. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Sandra Nyaira.
And I'm Chris Gande.
Among our top stories this evening,
a former St. Mary's legislator, Job Skala of the MDCT, is released from police custody and immediately asked to surrender himself to the law and order section of the police in Harare on his involvement in an alleged plot to assassinate President Robert Mugabe.
They don't have any other evidence except that inaudible recording which they have. That is the basis of all their charges. And also, they produced the story from the Sunday Mail.
The government says it will soon introduce tough mandatory rape sentences of up to life imprisonment as cases of gender-based violence, particularly rape, are on the rise.
Where the rapist knows that he is HIV positive, it must be life imprisonment.
And the Voluntary Media Council of Zimbabwe tells politicians to stop bribing journalists in the country, saying this is contributing to the decay of the media sector. A former St. Mary's legislator, Job Sikala of the MDCT, who was arrested yesterday on allegations of colluding with some ZANU-PF officials in a plot to allegedly assassinate President Robert Mugabe, was released early today from police custody after more than 16 hours of interrogations. No charges were, however, preferred against the outspoken lawmaker. Sikala says after being released, he later received a telephone call informing him to surrender himself to the police in Harare. Police say they have an audio recording of the alleged plot in which Sikala is being implicated. We reached Sikala, who says the police also produced a copy of the state-run Sunday Mail newspaper as evidence against him.
They later did not find any charge against me, and they said that when we want to charge you, we are going to call and invite you. But just 2 minutes ago, when you were about to call me now, I have received a call from Chief Superintendent Mangodza from the Law and Order Section just now, informing that I must surrender myself at the Law and Order now. So this is a new and latest development. But unfortunately, I'm not in Harare. And I have told them that I'm not able to go and submit myself today. So we have agreed that I will be there tomorrow at 9 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah, so would you tell us what was the line of questioning? Because we understand they have an audio recording in which you were talking about the plot to topple President Mugabe.
Yeah, that's very true. There was an audio recording that was inaudible, which they produced as one which they want to base their evidence on. And unfortunately, that video was absolutely inaudible. You could not hear anything at all.
What other evidence do they say they have?
They don't have any other evidence except that inaudible recording which they have. That is the basis of all their charges. And also, they produced the story from the Sunday Mail as another piece of their evidence.
That was Job Sikala, a former member of parliament for St. Mary's Chitungwiza. He spoke to Studio 7 on the line from Gweru.
The ZANU-PF Central Committee is expected to meet early next week to deliberate on the decision by the Politburo to amend the party's constitution. If adopted, this will complete the purging of Vice President Joyce Mujuru and their allies from key party organs such as the Central Committee and the Politburo. But some legal experts are arguing that the proposed amendments are a clear violation of the ZANU-PF constitution.
The proposed amendments will see the president of the party being given powers to appoint his two vice presidents and the party national chairman. Mrs. Mujuru's rival faction, allegedly led by Justice Minister Emmerson Mnangagwa and his and has the strong backing of First Lady Grace Mugabe, is pushing for the amendments alleging that concentrating power in the president will de-escalate tensions caused by serious factional fights in the party. Mrs. Mujuru and Mnangagwa are alleged to be fighting to succeed 90-year-old President Robert Mugabe, who still insists is fit to rule for years to come. Harare lawyer Terence Hussein, who has represented Mr. Mugabe on several occasions, says Mr. Mugabe is not breaking the party's constitution.
The president is a lawyer by profession, and as an individual, I've known that he's a stickler for the law. He very rarely goes against the law, and I can challenge many people to show me where he has ever broken the law. So I don't think that is correct at all. I think the amendments are being done all right. I'll agree that they're being done quickly, but they're being done in terms of the Constitution. In fact, you will have heard that they are actually going to be convening to amend the Constitution prior to the Central Committee meeting.
The ZANU-PF Constitution sets out a clear procedure in order to effect the constitutional amendments. But looking at the timeline, it's quite clear that those timelines cannot be met. Is it now not a fact that some in ZANU-PF are not allowing facts and the Constitution to get in the way?
Not exactly. What happened is that the Central Committee is the supreme decision-making body. So what it can do is that not only can it make its own rules, but it can also relax them, delegate them, or amend them. It can also ratify certain decisions after the fact.
That was Harare lawyer Terence Hussein speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
But Kent University Law Lecturer Dr. Alex Magaisa tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that the ZANU-PF Constitution is being violated.
There is only one issue, though, which is the procedural regularity. From what I have observed in Section 253, I believe, of their Constitution, there are certain steps or procedures that need to be fulfilled before you can enact amendments in according to their constitution. And these include that there has to be notification to the provinces, and I think there are time periods of about 3 months or thereabouts that have to be followed. That is what their constitution says. Now, I don't know whether they have the power or the president has the power to override those requirements. It may be that he has them, but I have not seen where it is stated in the constitution.
So technically you are saying Vice President Joyce Mujuru has a legal leg to stand on. But do you think she can exercise that right if it is available to take the party to court?
Well, I mean, like I said, this is really speaking in theory. My only concern is so insofar as whether ZANU-PF has followed its constitution is the implications on ZANU-PF's behavior generally in regard to the rule of law and the national constitution. In other words, if they can willfully violate their or contravene or disregard their own procedures in their own constitution, what more can they do vis-a-vis the national constitution? That is the reason why I've commented and I've analyzed it and think that it is not the right way to do things. However, as far as the Vice President Mujuru is concerned, whether or not she can actually take legal action, I think it's a matter of, number one, whether she has the courage to do so in view of the bigger political picture. Number two, whether or not it's an exercise in futility, because this essentially is a political issue.
That was Kent University Law Lecturer Dr. Alex Magaisa speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Kent in the United Kingdom.
The government says it is working on efforts to introduce a tough mandatory rape sentences of up to life imprisonment as cases of gender-based violence, particularly rape, are rising sharply in the country, with more than 4,300 women and girls being raped between January and October this year. Ivan Jifera reports from the capital.
Speaking as she launched the 16 days of activism against gender-based violence, Women Affairs Minister Opam Chinguri said under the proposals for mandatory rape sentencing due to be submitted to cabinet soon, raping children below 12 years will attract a life imprisonment sentence.
Where the rapist knows that he is HIV positive, it must be a life imprisonment. Gang rape also should call for a life imprisonment. Then rape, first offender, 30 years. Sodomy, 30 years. Sodomy, where the perpetrator knew they are HIV positive, life imprisonment.
She said most rape cases are occurring at home, where young girls are being raped by relatives. Hence this year's theme, From Peace in the Home to Peace in Our Communities, Promoting Safe Spaces for Women and Girls. Muchinguri said the fact that most rape cases were occurring in the home is an indication that something has gone badly wrong with the family value system in the country.
The values inculcated at family level shapes our behavior at community level, the workplace, and even in schools. It is therefore important as parents that we instill positive values and non-violent behavior amongst our children.
She said the enactment of the Domestic Violence Act in 2007 and various other initiatives, for example, the setting up of an interministerial task force on rape and sexual offenses, shows the government's commitment to eradicate gender-based violence. Neti Musanu is the director of Musasa Project, an organization that deals with abused women. She said most of the cases are occurring at home, adding Musasa Project has set up shelters in some districts to house victims of gender-based violence. She called for a multi-sectoral approach in dealing with the scourge of the gender-based violence, saying the police, the courts and individuals were not doing enough to end violence, especially against women. Musanu said the church is also not doing enough to keep the scourge, adding some men of cloth are also abusing women.
What is the messaging? What are we telling our young girls in these churches? What are we telling the men? Kwenda kumauma chechi kuno zikuneru wazano romati maya sa kunaru wazano romarume. No kuti vakatokwa nakare. Asindu wabaru kubata kachibaru.
The president of the Chief's Council, Chief Foshun Charumbira, said the country's justice system is to blame for the increase in rape cases, saying sentences are not harsh enough to deter would-be rapists. Charumbira said, in addition to meting out harsh sentences, victims must also be compensated as they would have been violated. The 16 days of activism against gender-based violence takes place annually worldwide from 25 November to 10 December to raise awareness on the problem and the need to end abuse of women and young girls. It also aims to influence behavior change and secure commitments from governments to end gender-based violence. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Chris, now we take a look at regional and international news.
At least two explosions have been reported outside the central mosque in Kano, Nigeria, while the building was crowded with people attending Friday prayers. Witnesses say they have seen scores of people injured and feared dead after the blast in a courtyard outside the building, Kano's Grand Mosque.
A French President Francois Hollande is visiting the Ebola-wrecked nation of Guinea. He becomes the first Western leader to visit one of the nations at the center of the outbreak.
And Namibians voted in presidential and legislative elections today. The poll is widely expected to deliver a comfortable win for the ruling Southwest People's Organization, or SWAPO, which has won every election since Namibia's independence from South Africa in 1990.
stop bribing journalists. That request from the Voluntary Media Council of Zimbabwe to members of parliament and politicians in general. Addressing members of the Parliamentary Media Committee at a workshop in Kadoma today, VMCZ official Tafuma Machakaire said the politicians were contributing to the decay in the media by bribing reporters. The workshop ending tomorrow is debating the issue of media self-regulation, with proponents making their case to lawmakers. Reporter Ntungamili Nkomo reached the legislator Anele Ndebele, who is attending the meeting.
Those who are speaking for self-regulation are arguing that the media in Zimbabwe has come of age. There is need for players within this sector to regulate in the absence of the heavy hand of government. On the other hand, is an argument from those who are saying totally be removed from regulating the media, because the events in the past few days have shown that should this industry be given the leeway to self-regulate, they would practically annihilate society with misinformation. So they are therefore arguing for a system where there is co-regulation, the media on one side and the state on the other.
What did you make of Mr. Machakaire's request to your politicians to stop bribing journalists?
This has been going on for a long time. It's a reality, not a good thing at all, not a good reflection of our morals as a society. But the reality is it's happening, and it so coincides with the fact that journalists in our society are not well remunerated.
That was lawmaker Anele Ndebele in Kadoma on the line with reporter Ntungamili Nkomo.
Meanwhile, the Zimbabwean public and many others in the world over are closely following developments within ZANU-PF, springing out the allegations of factionalism that seem to have put Vice President Joyce Mujuru's political career on the line. A source of most of the information on the ongoing ZANU-PF crisis is the Zimbabwe's media. The Media Monitoring Project of Zimbabwe recently noted biased coverage in the state media, which has been aligned with the alleged faction of Justice Minister Emmerson Mnangagwa, while some privately owned media has been accused by First Lady Grace Mugabe of favoring the alleged faction of Vice President Mujuru. For a sense of the media's role at this point, Studio 7's Ndimiake Makalele sought comment from Aiden Witherell of the weekly Zimbabwe Independent newspaper and journalism professor Stanford Mukasa. Witherell says the private media is striving to report fairly.
Well, we'd like to say that essentially the reading public who will define whether we are successful or not. We would like to say we are, but we have an active, supportive role in the media. We hope that we're performing a useful service to the public of Zimbabwe.
Professor Mukasa, what has been your observation of the way this unfolding crisis within ZANU-PF has been covered?
Well, there are two media systems in Zimbabwe. There is the independent news on one hand, and of course the state-supported and funded media. Until about the elections, they were all united, I mean, that is the state-supported media, in supporting ZANU, both factions. No secrets were ever revealed about either faction before independence. Now, with the apparent ascendancy of one faction, presumably led by Mnangagwa, we see a lot of detail and secrets about the other faction. I'm sure Mr. Woodrow will agree with me that at this point they are enjoying some break. And they
absolutely
are now observers.
Absolutely enjoying it and watching,
because
the two sides, the government, and ourselves, engaging in mortal combat. This is an interesting role, and it's one which we're not going to give up too easily.
Well, staying with you, Mr. Weatherall, the challenge now is on the independent papers, which also for a long time had been popped up as anti-government. How do they fare in terms of the coverage also of the conflict within ZANU-PF, and then also you have the conflict within the opposition parties?
Yes, it's very interesting, of course, watching developments within ZANU-PF.
that this role hasn't been played before by either side. And it's going to be interesting to see which way it goes. But the role of the independent press is to monitor these clashes of the titans and going about the business that way.
Professor Mukasa, when you look at the history of, for one, the state papers, and second, the independent papers, there's always been a bias, one for the government, one for the opposition. Now it seems as though there are splinters. Are papers or the media being caught up in who to follow, or is that sense of objectivity still being practiced, from your observation?
Objectivity in the Zimbabwean journalistic sense is really subjective. You are objective to the extent that you determine that you are objective. But what I really see, and this is a tragedy, the country is heading over the cliff. And there's so much preoccupation with the Nongo, Grace Mugabe, what I would call Mahumbwe politics. this is just child play compared to the seriousness of the economic situation in the country.
Stanford Mukasa is an independent commentator and journalism professor at Indiana, the University of Pennsylvania. Also on the panel from Harare was Aiden Wetherell of the weekly Zimbabwe Independent. Both spoke with Studio 7's Ndimiake Mwakalielie. Tune in tomorrow for more on this discussion, analyzing the media's role in light of the internal conflicts with Zimbabwe's ruling and opposition parties.
The Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe says it is unhappy with a directive from the Minister of Education that schools should close today to pave way for the hosting of a crucial ZANU-PF Congress in Harare and the Youth Games in Bulawayo next week. PTUZ General Secretary Raymond Majongwe says the development has affected the end-of-year examination marking and the processing of school reports, among other things. Majongwe says teachers were surprised to receive a circular signed by Minister of Education Permanent Secretary Sylvia Utete Masango yesterday, advising headmasters that schools will close a week earlier than the scheduled December 4th date. Majongwe tells reporter Jonga Kandemiri that this will force teachers from these two provinces to faster track marking and producing reports.
Apparently, we are quite certain that it appears this ministry has a propensity of just doing things willy-nilly, without proper consultation and due process. What we are observing is that this notice was given within 48 hours, as if these schools are nightclubs or bars, where the police can just come and say there's no water, there's no electricity, or there's too much noise, can you close shop? Which we want to believe should not be seen in processes where people are leading and administering proper processes. Everybody knew that the ZANU-PF Congress was going to happen. Everybody knew that these youth games are going to happen. So it comes to us as a complete surprise as to why this decision then has to be made in this particular fashion.
Is there any disruption to the education process, Mr. Majungu?
Yes, we seriously see this because the teachers were actually caught in a process that was called a curriculum review process. That was also introduced without notice. Many of them were then seized with that particular program. A lot of us have actually been forced to fast-track marking of exams and production of reports and results, which will obviously see short results being produced. And we also note that in terms of proper teaching and proper school management, and we also want to believe that a lot of parents were taken off guard because there are certain pupils, certain children who are not ordinarily prepared.
That was PTUZ Secretary General Raymond Majongwe speaking with Jonga Kandemiri from Harare.
And in sports news, the Confederation of African Rugby Sevens tournament roars into life at Prince Edward School tomorrow in what promises to be an exciting show. Reporter Michael Kariati gives us the story.
This is the biggest international rugby tournament that Zimbabwe has ever hosted, and Zimbabwe rugby followers should brace themselves for an exciting two-day show. All in all, 12 top sevens African rugby playing sides will be on parade in the tournament that is also serving as a seeding for teams for the qualifiers of the 2016 Rio de Janeiro Olympic Games, as well as the 2015 All-Africa Games. Zimbabwe are in Pool B alongside defending champions Kenya, Uganda, Nigeria, Namibia, and the Ivory Coast in what is the tougher of the two groups. Coach Gilbert Nyamsamba is aware of the threat he is facing.
This definitely is going to be a tough tournament for us. Being the Africa Cup, yeah, it is a major one for us.
Pool A features Botswana, South Africa, Madagascar, Tunisia, Zambia, and Senegal. Nyamsamba is called Zimbabwe's best players available, including locally based captain Jack Leitao, Lambert Grunwald, Fortune Chipendo, and Stephen Hunduza. He has also called foreign-based players Gardner Nishironga, Morgan Vagiu, Tafadzwa Chikondindo, Gerald Sibanda, Wesley Mbaje, and Jabulo Nmure to add guile to his squad. Nyamsamba says they've prepared well and are ready to face the best Africa is to offer.
But we've done all that we can to prepare, and we are going to do our best.
Apart from the Rio de Janeiro Games, the tournament is also being used as a qualifier for the Hong Kong Sevens tournament to be held in March next year. The top four teams from the competition will qualify for the Hong Kong Sevens. That aside, the old rivalry between Dynamos and the Islanders returns this weekend when the two teams meet in the Gushungo Cup, a celebration of President Robert Mugabe's victory in the 2008 presidential elections. This is the fourth time that the two teams are meeting, with Highlanders having lost all the encounters, including a 4-1 spanking in the TM Pick and Pay Challenge. However, Botswana are seeking redemption in a horrific season in which they failed to finish in the top four in the Casolaga Premier Soccer League and also failed to garner a single silverware. The winners of the National Sports Stadium Showdown will take home 45,000, while the losers will get 35,000. Gate charges have been reduced to $2 for the cheapest seat in the stadium. Turning to the Barclays English Premiership, Chelsea, who are still unbeaten in 12 starts with 32 points, travel to the Stadium of Light for a date with the struggling Sunderland, knowing pretty well that this is not going to be a light assignment. Although way down the pecking order in 13th position with only 13 points, Sunderland are known for pulling shocks, especially against the top sides, and Jose Mourinho's side have to prepare for a strong resistance. A draw or a loss for the Blues could give Southampton the chance to close the gap between the two sides, as the Saints are at home to defending champions Manchester City. The Citizens have not been good travellers, and with Southampton's impressive home form, the Saints could pick up the required 3 points at the Stadium of Light. The other matches lined up for the weekend are as follows: West Brom versus Arsenal at the Hawthorns, Burnley versus Aston Villa at Trafford Ground, Liverpool versus Stoke at Anfield, Manchester United versus Hull at Old Trafford, Queen's Park Rangers versus Leicester at Loftus Road, and Swansea versus Castro at the Liberty Stadium. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Michael Cariati.
Thank you, Michael. Now we recap today's top stories.
A former St. Mary's legislator, Job Sikala of the MDCT, is released from police custody and immediately asked to surrender himself to the law and order section of the police in Harare on his involvement in an alleged plot to assassinate President Robert Mugabe.
The government says it will introduce a tougher mandatory rape sentences of up to life imprisonment as cases of gender-based violence are on the rise in the country.
And the Voluntary Media Council of Zimbabwe tells politicians to stop bribing journalists in the country, saying this is contributing to the decay of the media sector.
Just as a reminder to our listeners to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when Gibbs and Blessing will discuss with you, the listeners and the experts, about the 2015 national budget. That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Sandra Nyaira. Good night, Zimbabwe.
And I'm Chris Gande. Good night and have a happy weekend.